We are all that stands between you and beer.
So we're done.
But we do appreciate you coming here and being part of this community discussion, part of our annual community meeting. We're the Web Standards Project, and I'm Kimberly Blessing, one of the group co-leads. We're going to get started here in just a second, but one of the things that I just want to start off by saying is that there are a lot of other Web Standards Project members and task force members who are in the audience. So can you guys, since it's going to be harder to see you, can you guys all stand up and turn around and face the audience so that folks know who you are as well, please? And I have to say that, like, in front here, there are some folks I still haven't met yet. They're part of the International Liaisons group. So it's great to see that so many of our newer task force members are able to make it to this meeting. It's very important. So going down the line here to my right, we have Stephanie Sullivan, who is the Adobe Task Force lead. Perhaps you saw the announcement earlier today. If not, Stephanie's going to be talking about that new task force. Glenda Sims heads up our International Liaisons group as one of the co-leads. She's also helped out with the fabulous bookmark project that hopefully everybody has a sheet of bookmarks. And we'll be talking more about that in a minute. And does the sign still say Aaron Gustafson down there?
I fixed it.
Oh, okay.
So improved it. Improved it.
What does it actually say? It does say Wilson. That's
awesome. So Aaron Gustafson at the last minute wasn't able to make it, but Chris Wilson was happy to fill in and join us as a representative from the WASP Microsoft Task Force. So thanks for being here, Chris.
Thanks.
All righty, so let's get started. In case you're not aware, the Web Standards Project was formed in 1998, and by our calculations, that means that we're 10 years old. So Glenda took it upon herself to reach out to some of the former leads and find out what their proudest moments were of the past 10 years. So here we have Super Zeldman. I personally prefer King of Web Standards. I wish there were a crown on top of all of that, personally. So Jeffrey kind of got us through some of the earliest stages. He was a member from very early on when the group was being organized. He designed, I think, the very first version of the website, which you can still see at archive.webstandards.org. And, you know, if you think back to that time period, it was primarily evangelism. It was just, hey, there are these things. They're W3C recommendations, but they're basically the rules that the browser manufacturers are supposed to be following. They're the rules that then we as developers should be following. You know, that's an important time. I know that that's like the time frame where I was kind of getting on board with standards, maybe many of you as well. So then we move on, and Steve Champion took on WASP after that. And we love Steve. Steve's still a member. And thank goodness we have Steve. He puts up with all of our all of our mailing lists and mail aliases, and best of all of our spam handling. And so Steve shepherded the group through some pretty important phases as well. And then we had Molly Holschlag take over. And Molly was probably the person that most of you identify with as kind of taking WASP out to the community and saying, you know, it can't be a closed discussion. It can't just be, you know, a bunch of talking heads. It really has to be a community that's, you know, banding together around this in order to create change and in order to support one another. And so that kind of brings us up to where we are today. Drew McClellan and I are the co-leads today, and I'd say, you know, we're kind of having a rough time of figuring out what WASP should be now and where we go next. So at the end of our slides, and we're not going to try to take too long here, we actually want to ask you that question. So you may want to just start kind of thinking about what WASP needs to be doing today, and then we're going to have you guys come up to the mic and talk about that a little bit. So let's get started. Steph's going to talk about the Adobe Task Force.
All right. We've created a new task force. It came out of an old task force. I was a member of the Dreamweaver Task Force, which I believe started back in 2002 with Drew McClellan and Rachel co-leading. And they really worked heavily with Adobe and the engineers there to get Dreamweaver turned into a very standards compliant, clean code WYSIWYG, since it is the largest one. And they really made great strides. And so this year, I started feeling like, okay, Dreamweaver is in a great place and we're still advising, but we're really not working that hard anymore. Of course, when we started, Dreamweaver was owned by Macromedia. And of course, it's now Adobe. Adobe has a lot of products that output to the web space. So I got the idea that we really should expand this task force and, you know, take it to all the products that output to the web, including Flash, Flex, you know, Captivate. Because even though those perhaps don't have, you know, HTML output, they still have ECMA standards. They still have accessibility and best practices. So we're expanding. I've added some new members. Nikki Merritt is over there. I don't know if Virla is here, but she's here somewhere. They're going to be helping. We've added several. We're adding several more. It's a lot of products. But the one thing that I really have a burden for is, you know, I think that we've gotten the browsers going in the right direction and the vendors are going in the right direction. Adobe really gets the standards thing, and I heard somebody else is getting it too, and...
Who is that?
Well, I'll let you talk about that. But, you know, everybody, you know, things are moving in that direction. And I do a lot of speaking as I have traveled this year. And what I found is there still are a lot of people that don't understand it, would do things with accessibility or standards if they understood how. So we're going to start, take advantage of the oft-ignored Learn section of WASP this year, and our Adobe task force will be putting up some best practices and, you know, things about Flash, making it accessible, things like that. And we will be looking at the community for some of that writing as well. We're doing a lot. We're not going to write everything, but if anybody is interested in being involved in that, please feel free to contact me. Is there a way to contact me on the website?
public@webstandards.org.
Okay. She'll send it to me. That'll be fine. Or my website is W3Conversions. You can hit me there. But that's kind of our vision. We want to work with Adobe to really bring these products more and more into creating clean output more simply and then educating the public on how to use them properly.
Thanks, Steph. So, Glenda, you've got two things to talk about.
This is a really exciting time to be involved in web standards evangelism, and it's actually becoming more of an education effort than an evangelism effort at this point. It has something to do with something that's happening over down here we'll talk about in a minute. But I realized that the WASP Street Team, for the people of us who are up here or official WASP members, that's great. But it's really not about us. It's about making the web accessible for everyone. And that takes each one of us in this room and all of the developer community. Thank you, Steph. So one of the projects that we wanted to do to allow you to take this out into your communities is to develop the bookmarks. How many of you have a bookmark right now? Excellent. Have you looked at the bookmark? All right. Are there any curious things on the back of your bookmark? You might have a lucky bookmark, because one of the things that we wanted to do today was, in addition to introducing you to the concept of bookmarks, which is that our website currently has warning, the web changes fast. This book may contain outdated material. If you need a good book, go to, and then our URL for a list of some recommended good books. Certainly not all of them, but there's some books that we're aware of that are good books. So that PDF is available on the website. You can download it, print it, and take it and put it in books in your library that are out of date. And this will help the librarians to know that the book is out of date. So how do we know a book might be out of date? Let's see. It's talking about table layout. It's showing an inaccessible method of coding, abuse of XHTML, non-semantic markup, or actually coding for a specific browser and not coding for web standards. So when you spot this, you can mark it. I will encourage you to not try to destroy the book. Because as much as I used to think that libraries are only for me to be able to go get books, and you too, they are also a historical reference. And so what we're trying to do is to get those books that teach outdated ways of developing on the web moved over to the archived section next to the Pluto is a planet. All right.
I heard some angry mutterings there.
I know.
It's still
Pluto.
A planet to me too, man.
And how about, and the world is flat?
It's a little better.
Oh, that's a good book too. Wait, no, never mind. So in a moment, we won't do it right now because I want to save time for questions, but in a moment, if you happen to have a bookmark that has a curious pink stamp of Glenda the Good Witch on the back, then you will be a lucky winner of one of the books off of our list, which have been generously donated by the authors themselves. For example, Sean Henry gave me Just Ask as she darted out to her accessibility panel. Jeffrey Zeldman has given us 5 copies of The Amazing Designing with Web Standards. You're good at this. As well as A Press has sent books and Peach Pit and new writers. So that's the bookmark project. And then, because, you know, it's not just enough to go put a bookmark in a book. It's really important to connect web standards around the world. And Molly, under her tenure, realized that as you looked at the Web Standards Project, 3 years ago, I think all of the content was in English, or there were most of it in English. And the mission, I think, had been translated and some of the FAQs. And Molly had this idea, wouldn't it be wonderful if we connected with all the other web standards groups that are all around the world? You know, as many countries, as many languages as we could. And not to say that we, the Web Standards Project in the United States, are, you know, the ones that have it right. No, we're connecting to the people all over the world that are just like us. So over the last 2 years, I've been co-leading that group with Steph Troth, who, if you ever have a chance to work with, is the most amazing human to work with. Wonderful. Our team has grown to 52 members, covering 32 countries, 21 languages, and continuing to grow. Some of the members are right here in our front row. And they've run WASP cafes, which are a little bit like bar camps based on web standards. And those have been run in Tokyo, Paris, and Rome. We're going to encourage more of those, as well as translating web resources. Because if you're trying to learn about web standards and English is not your first language, it'd be a lot better to read about it in your own language. So that's what I have to say.
All right, so let's hold there for a moment, because since Chris is here, Chris reminded us of what his bio was in the South by Southwest booklet 2 years ago. If nobody has it or recalls what it is, his boss actually wrote, what was it? Chris Wilson is a platform architect at Microsoft on Internet Explorer.
And will spend the next 10 years making up for the last 10. I think was my actual. So, which I thought was a little unfair, frankly. But
given recent events.
I guess it was 3 years ago, so I only have 7 years left.
I think you've come a long way in a short amount of time.
This should count double or something.
Glenda, go for it.
Ta-da.
Wow, we thought there'd be a bigger reaction to that. I'm going to start it off.
Well, you are keeping them from beer, so take what you can get.
I don't know. I mean, how many of you were like on the ceiling when you read the announcement? Come on.
I see some.
Come
yeah.
on.
How many people don't know what you're talking about?
Okay. That's the problem. I best let you talk about first.
No, that's all right. So, I mean, the core here really is that on the Internet Explorer team, we've always had to balance standards compliance and compatibility with the current web. And we still have this challenge. We had this challenge before changing this decision. We have it now, just the other side. If you err on the side of compatibility, obviously you have some problems about moving the current state of the web forward. We, in the spirit of our interoperability principles, we decided that was a bad thing, which, you know, some of us sort of knew that. And of course, if we decide to change the standards compliant web, very different from 4 years ago or even 5 years ago, a lot of the web is actually in standards mode, which is great, of course, but it also means that we're changing behavior for that chunk of the web, for more than half of the web now. So we are going to have a big compatibility issue as we roll out IE8, which is when I actually need help from all of you to go out and evangelize getting pages to work properly with a standards compliant browser, which I certainly hope IE8 will be in that sense. So that's my ask for help, really. Make this a good decision for Microsoft as well as for, you know, the standards web. So that's all.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
So back to the question I posed earlier, which is, what is it that WASP should be working on now? We've got a mic, unfortunately only one over here on this other side away from the projector. So if you guys can make sure these are ideas. I mean, questions are good. We're going to have time for questions as well, but we want to focus on ideas first. Things that have come up in years past are mobile, government, process. So fire away. We need to make sure our mic is on first.
Try again.
Hi. So I support the Web Standards Project in theory, but of late have dissented with almost everything you've done in practice. And part of that is because you've stopped giving browser vendors permission to do new things. And so if I had a wish, it would be that you find a way to balance the concern of keeping the web compatible and open with working with browser vendors to give them a way to introduce new features and take risks without the fear of being bludgeoned by Zaltman's blue hat. Thanks.
Do we have any response to that? Anybody have any thoughts? Any other WASPs, I should say, too. Anybody else can pop up here. Porter, you kind of look like you have a response. Come on up. Come up.
Here. You want to hand him a mic?
Here.
So the issue that I have sort of ties into one of the things that came out of our roundtable discussion, that there's sort of a zealotry side to the standards movement that is very counterproductive. And the zealots say, if it's not in the standard, you can't implement it. Well, that wasn't the way that the W3C standards were supposed to work. They were supposed to be about codifying behaviors that had been implemented so that other implementers could come along and implement them the same way. That doesn't mean you can't add a new feature to your browser that isn't in the standard, but what it does mean is if you implement a feature that's in the standard, you should implement it the way it's specified in the standard. So browser vendors, tool manufacturers, whomever you are, should be allowed to implement new features. I don't think there's anybody in the Web Standards Project that would say, no, simply do what's in the spec and that's all you're allowed to do. However, there does seem to be a sort of very vocal core group of people outside the Web Standards Project that seem to take that to be the message of web standards. So if there's anything that I can say, you know, in that realm, it would be that's definitely not our message. That innovation is absolutely the core of standards, that standards are about bringing together what has been innovated.
Yeah, so the comment was it hasn't been clear, and that's probably true. Go ahead.
It's worse than having not been clear. It's been, I think, actively the opposite. I don't I would get the feeling from reading the Web Standards Project's website that your job is to yell at web developers and not to work with browser vendors to make things better. And that is a problem for you.
Wow. Okay. That's really eye-opening to me because I'd say, especially the comments that we were hearing last year, was that we're not paying attention to developers. We're only paying attention to the browsers. So it's good to hear that side of things.
There are a few standard ways to extend the standards, such as the browser prefixes for CSS, so using dash webkit or dash mos.
Right.
Part of what I'm suggesting is that the Web Standards Project find ways to work with browser vendors to find those extension points to plan for the future. There are some core things which we can't get right now. I mean, a lot of the standards are fucking broken. Like, they're seriously messed up. And fetishizing those and allowing the community that's out there to, as you said, there's a core group of people who take it a bit far, allowing them to continue to have sway or pretend like they're the voice of web standards is a problem for you, right? It definitely crowds out your more balanced message if that is the message that you're sending. And so working with browser vendors to find those extension points and then working to evangelize the community in a healthy way and balance that message, that's what I would suggest. That's all I'm getting at.
Great, thanks.
I was just saying there are standard ways of extending JavaScript, standard ways of extending CSS. If there are new features like what the IE team tried to do recently to better or worse feedback from the community response, those are things that the WASP is actually working with. The Microsoft Task Force with the browser switching.
Although I'll point out that the CSS one is not actually for proprietary extensions to CSS. It's supposed to be used for things that you want to put into CSS and haven't been proposed yet.
Right. So, for example, the CSS animation or CSS.
Sure.
But that stuff is like something that Apple would be implementing anyway.
Right.
But is proposed in a way that could standardize it for all vendors.
Right. But the way that the spec reads about vendor proprietary extensions, they're supposed to get ripped out if they're rejected, in effect, by the standards group. Like, you're not supposed to use that. I'm not supposed to use that to go ram in a bunch of IE-specific things that I don't really care if it goes in the standard or not. We just want them. Like, that's actually against the spirit of the extension, which I'm just saying that's what's in there. I'm not saying I'm in favor of that necessarily. It really is a slippery slope, though, because if you do, as Porter said, if you do say, you know, there's a core of the standard, and of course you can go beyond that, then what happens when those things get put into the standard but changed a little bit, like isn't quite what you implemented to begin with? And I think we're richly familiar with that in the IE team. You know, we implemented a lot of things very early, and then, hey, maybe it wasn't exactly the right way to do it. Maybe it wasn't the best thing. So the standard gets improved a little bit, but then we're broken. And for a long time, we were very allergic to sort of the dash MS dash prefixing, and that caused a bunch of problems that we have to go deal with now. But even in the future, you'll still have that problem of, then let's say the CSS animations get accepted but changed a little bit. What happens if they're a little bit different? Like, is Apple going to have to keep two copies of CSS animations around forever, or do they, you know, not quite fix them? Or like, there's a lot of hard questions in there that there aren't really easy answers to.
Okay, next idea.
I'm much shorter. I think a major issue with today's process for learning web standards and learning even just design to begin with is the fact that the educators aren't necessarily educated themselves about what's going on. So I think that more aggressively tackling these educators who are teaching antiquated processes and giving these, you know, making students buy these books that cringe. Like, I have friends, and like, I cringe to think that this is what you're learning to start off what you hope to be a lifelong career.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like Steph needs to come up and speak to that one.
I will tell you that is a really good idea for what the WASP needs to be focused on. And with the changes that IE8 is bringing, I literally feel that all of the people who needed before to even understand that web standards exist, that's not going to be our big issue. Because when they're page doesn't look too hot in IE8 and they run in and say, make it work like IE7, they'll know. And so it really is an important movement for us to go into education and make sure that our colleges and our high schools are not outputting students that are learning the way their faculty member learned how to do it 10 years ago. And I'm happy to say that there's a new member on the EDU task force that is actually at the higher ed level, has been teaching web standards since 2002, and he's right there, Aaron.
Oh, okay, I can see him.
Aaron Walter, right there.
And he's ducking.
And there have been a lot of discussions here at South By about education. I think you're going to see some very exciting things happen in the upcoming year.
Thank you.
I'm just kind of reiterating her education point. I understand, breaking it as far as the browsers and hoping to God that they'll like learn the right way by breaking their bones. But I just think that I don't think that there's a lot of resources out there, like collaborative resources that are all in one great big bundle that you can really point someone to and say, this is how easy it is to learn. And you just need to start from point A and go through point C and figure it all out and really try to understand what's going on. Right now, I just don't know if there's a lot of collaborative resources out there that we can point our educators to really get that point across.
Stephanie Troth, previously a member of the EDUTF, I've scaled back my activities this year. I think one of the hardest thing and one of the myths that exists is that web standards are dead easy to learn. If you follow these five steps, you get there. I think it's actually more important to understand the philosophy of what we're trying to get to. And that's a harder thing to teach. One of the things that we've done at universities in the past, and I think I said this probably exact same thing last year, is that if you're a person at your university or at your college who knows web standards, try and talk to your colleagues about it, run sessions with it, with the people locally, and do that kind of teaching yourself and what you know. And every time you're stuck, we have tons of people you can contact for further information. Waiting for a huge collaborative network is going to be slow, and what things are like. I mean, Wikipedia take a long time to get the content together. So if you imagine, it would be much more effective if you just start talking about it locally instead of waiting for something to happen.
That said, one of the ideas that has been on the table for almost an entire year now, maybe even slightly longer than a year, I could actually go back and check in the logs as to when I installed the wiki, was to actually take the Learn section of the website, which, if you look at the dates on which articles were published in that area, there are some pretty good, but kind of outdated tools in there.
Bookmark it.
I can't put the bookmark in the website. It won't work in. To basically take that section and turn it into a wiki instead and allow anybody to contribute to it. Obviously, having stewards that are in charge of it to ensure that what ends up in there is quality material and maintains that spirit of ensuring, the best communication, both of that spirit as well as trying to do that kind of handholding through that process. And I'd say that that's just been a matter of, finding people who want to contribute, finding time for people to manage it, ensuring that our website will stay up to be able to handle that load. We've had some issues with that recently. That just means that you guys are all hitting the website. So I don't have a real problem with that. We just got to fix the
whole lot of IE8 beta.
Yeah, that other day, all of a sudden IE8 just spiked on the site.
Really did mess up my presentation, by the way.
Sorry.
All right, you got to back up. It was great. End of the hour.
Yeah. So that's something that I obviously last year, I think we promised a lot. I don't want to promise a lot. What I want to find are the people who know that they have time they can commit this year to helping us with those things. Because I would be very honest in saying that the one thing that I think, we all think we have is time. And then when it really comes down to doing something that's going to take, you know, 20 hours of solid work, meaning you can't spread it out over 5 weeks and get to it eventually, it's like you really need to focus that 20 hours of brain power towards one thing. You know, when you have full-time jobs and other things going on, it's kind of tough to do that. You know, we as WASP have to recommit our time. And then, you know, for, like I said, as there are folks in the audience who have that interest and that passion and you know, you want to contribute, then we need to find other ways of welcoming you. And hopefully a wiki is something that would do that.
Yeah, having a community environment would be very helpful. I think with building a huge resource like that, I'm less concerned with the, you know, like I said, step-by-step process. Maybe that wasn't necessarily articulated correctly. Maybe just contacting the educators and giving them a local resource that they can talk to might be helpful as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that we're listening and going to take this back to the EDUTF. I think you'll like what you see.
And in fact, I would say if anybody's not aware of our education task force, again, webstandards.org, go to action, click on education task force. You know, send that link around. We get mail all the time. There's actually a public address that people can write to. We get email from students who tell us, oh, my professor doesn't know, you know, XYZ, I got a fail on my latest assignment because I use CSS. You know, we actually do hear those horror stories.
Enough tables.
One of the things we actually also do have is that we have an open IRC channel on freenode.net. So if you jump on #edutf on our on irc.freenode.net, you find one of us there all the time. So there's always either Holly, Rob, or myself. And we have had educators come in and asking us for tips, and Holly's usually the one who will tell you, you know, you can do this or that, and you can approach this in a different way. So we're there. Come talk to us.
Yeah, and there's even a mailing list that people can sign up for. So there are other resources. Oh, yeah, please. Go ahead.
I just joined the Education Task Force like 2 weeks ago. I think mainly because I complained about education. I was interviewing for the company I was working for, and the students coming through were rubbish, and I wrote a blog post and complained. A local college contacted me and said, well, get off your ass and do something, and I ended up teaching there for a bit. If you've got stuff to complain about it locally and see what happens. There might be some smart people in colleges that are having problems finding people to teach. They know what to teach, but they can't find people like us. And I'm losing my voice. But yeah, complain locally.
And act locally.
Yes.
Well, that's complaining.
So first, let me gush about Acid 3 for a minute. I promise there's an idea at the end. I think it's fantastic. I think it's orders of magnitude better than Acid 2. Both in the breadth of things that it tests and the fact that the metric is a score out of 100, which really captures the granularity of supporting these standards much better than a mangled smiley face on a website. And I think the whole pass fail perception of Acid 2 complicated you know, things with, you know, in recent weeks, does IE8 support it or not, etc. I think that this might seem like a narrow point, but I think that the group responsible for Acid 3 could zoom out their focus just a little and make it more about being the browser liaisons. First, that would drive home the point that the other task forces are about not just talking to browsers but also talking to the community. And you know, this would be sort of the central hub for getting browsers to implement standards. And I think it would also encourage community participation more if they knew that group were not just about writing a test, and then once the test is done, you know, people feel like there's nothing left. You know, we just wait for browsers to implement them. But there's an ongoing conversation. You know, once the fact that the test is finished, there's still a lot to be done. Right.
Well,
no.
So so I'm trying to understand what kind of I agree that there's support that's needed after it goes live. Acid 2, we had tons of just server issues that complicated that test. But I'm trying to narrow down on what it is that you'd like to see happen. So really ACID 3 isn't a task force. I know we called it that with ACID 2. We didn't call it that with ACID 3. So can you go back to the mic? Or, yeah. Sorry. I just want to make sure we get all of this recorded.
Well, that may be part of the, I mean, it's got the same sort of placement on the website. ACID 3 does, has the same sort of placement on the site as the other task forces. So yeah. Then maybe that is the suggestion or idea, that to organize sort of to organize like an ongoing task force that, you know, is responsible for, among other things, ACID 3 and any other tests that may follow.
With all the browser makers.
Right.
A browser task force.
This was originally going to be where I yelled at all of you for dissolving the DOM scripting task force. But you know, when I thought about it more, I realized that the DOM scripting task force was more about evangelizing DOM scripting to the community and less about the I was originally just fuming mad because, you know, there's still a lot to be done in the area of DOM scripting, and
Dory's like nodding her head really emphatically right behind you.
Get whiplash that way, Dory.
That she agrees.
Awesome. Okay, and you know, I'm less concerned with the name that task force takes, but I think that you know, people aggressively lobbying the browsers, you know, if it isn't clear to someone just visiting the site, you know, where they can direct their energy in order to, you know, try to get their voice heard in, you know, the face of the big four browsers, then I think that inhibits participation.
So,
still not so much of a question, still sort of an idea.
Right.
So,
can I respond to that? I know what a quality JavaScripter and technologist Andrew is, and I hereby nominate him to and volunteer some of his time to start that task force if he's willing.
Does he work for you?
Dear God, that'll James, you're too kind. I couldn't thank you enough for that.
But there's a darn.
Do you guys work together? Locally.
No, they
I am complaining locally, but with the megaphone of this conference, just trying to throw that out there.
Chris, did you want to respond?
Yeah. So actually, I really like a number of the things you've said, because I'm not a big fan of the ACID test series for a couple of reasons. Not actually because we failed the ACID 3 test today, or because we failed the ACID. I actually almost did wear my ACID 2 T-shirt and at the last moment just put on something else randomly. But the main reason, because I totally agree. I like the fact that there's now a score that you can actually tell how close you are. It's not just, you know, actually my favorite was the big red background in only IE. That was my favorite. But anyhow, the thing that I'm still frustrated by with the ACID 3 test is I don't know what it is. Like, I know how people thought of the ACID 2 test. They thought of it as an ACID test of whether IE cared about standards or not. And I was frustrated because we spent all this time in IE 7 trying to fix the biggest problems that web developers were actually running into on a day-to-day basis. And then we were just getting, you know, screamed at because we had some weird paragraph list item bug and like we didn't follow the right rule at the right time. And the problem really is that it ends up conflating, the ACID test series ends up conflating standards compliance with prioritization of standards. And when I look at what ACID 2 did, like it prioritized a bunch of things that frankly were good stuff. Like they were kind of the next thing after we fixed a ton of really nasty bugs. Things like generated content. Obviously, people would love that, right? Display table types. Yeah, great. You know, you totally want those things next. And the hard part is I don't know, like, if I take the ACID 3 test as the thing that we should be doing next. Like, do we go implement just enough SVG to make that pass? Or do we do a really good job at, you know, implementing everything in SVG 1.1 tiny or something like that? And that's one of the reasons why we managed to internally get everyone on the same page that it was a really good idea for us to help build really complete test suites. That's why as we built the CSS 2.1 engine, we took all of our test cases and donated them. Like just said, here you go. You know, let's get them into the test suite or, you know, figure out whether they're the right tests or not. We've actually had some great feedback on that already. I think what I would like to see, to answer the question that's up on there, I'd like to see test suites for one, because it would be really helpful to know when we're done with a particular standard. The other thing that I'd like to see that I think the Web Standards Project has always kind of done is, you know, help us understand what priorities we ought to have. Like, where do these things rate? Like, where does passing a hypothetical, fully complete CSS 2.1 test suite rate against some other goal, right? Some other goal of, you know, fixing the DOM eventing model or, you know, implementing SVG or whatever. Back in the annals of Zeldman history, you know, we had the top 10 CSS bugs in IE, which oddly not all of them were CSS bugs, or at least spec implementation problems. That was kind of wacky because it was like a total one-off, but at the same time, it did help say these things are things that we really think are important, and I'd kind of like to know that, I guess, other than me just making it up from randomly reading blogs and stuff.
Good. No.
I do read his blog regularly.
I have an idea that's related to education and to your bookmark project. So a lot of the learning happens on the web and not with books, and there's a lot of old and outdated material there. And it would be nice to have a library or a WASP-approved badge, something that could be identifying individual articles and techniques that are still, or maybe JavaScript repositories that are actually still relevant and still best practices. So for example, I work for the California State University system. We're in the middle of a huge accessibility implementation, and I need to train hundreds of people that are admin assistants. They're going to have to use Google to get help because we don't have enough resources to educate them all. And I think there needs to be some way to identify what's good and what's not, because they're going to find everything.
That's a really good idea, Andrea. And I also share your pain. Being a webmaster on the University of Texas campus, I'm very much in the same boat. And I've also been out to California State University and presented accessibility to those people. So you're right. It's not just about books. It's also about online materials that need to be vetted. I did have an interesting conversation, though, recently, saying that, or made me reach the conclusion that for many of us, the web materials are the critical materials, because we really need the very, very latest. For someone just learning these concepts, to have it in a book is very, very important as well. And so these books up here are an important piece, but they're certainly not the whole piece. So great idea. Right. I'll just repeat. Techniques change so quickly that it's hard to get the latest version of the book out before, as opposed to on a web page where, you know, something can be updated immediately. Great idea.
I'm a huge CSS nerd, and I've been following CSS 3, which is huge, and obviously it's going to take for a long time for the browsers to implement it.
Well, I mean, the great thing about CSS 3 actually is that it is modularized to some degree, and that does mean it won't be another, you know, ream of paper spec that we have to print out and start a new engine with.
But is there a way at least to have, so that the browsers don't all go like completely off, like in different...
I think that's one of the things I was kind of getting at, is some help to all of the browsers that's representative of what web developers would like the most, as kind of that, you know, as if you think of it as the interoperable core, how we get the interoperable core to mostly grow in the same shape, at least. I mean, some browsers are always going to do some set of things that the other browsers don't find interesting, and vice versa. But trying to help guide the shape of that core so we don't go in radically different directions, or at least that the shared part is what people need the most. I think it'd be good. And that does include, like, you know, picking the parts of CSS3 that people really want and need. Like, I know a few of those because I've talked to a bunch of people who've said, hey, I really want this feature. It would be useful for this. And I'm, oh, okay.
So you're thinking of having like a public thing, or like, I think what Dell Computer does, a lot of places do, where like people just come in and say, I want this, or.
Yeah. I mean, you could do that in a number of ways. You could.
We do like American Idol where we call on the phone and vote.
No.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Do I get to be Simon?
Rubbish.
Oh, rubbish. Rubbish. Get off the stage.
I forget her name, but to her point with the outdated material on websites and whatnot, there exists some services that kind of allow you to comment outside of a normal website's commenting service. In fact, I think Andrew's one time showcased one of these at our Refresh Austin meetings. Did you? I think you may have one of our show and tells. Anyways. Well, those you can tag
it's the
things.
The one that was started in Austin. Shadows? No.
Is it?
I know what he's talking about.
To essentially kind of comment outside of the, you know, the space that the website provides, or if they don't even provide a space, it's just an example. Is it counterproductive to the movement to call them out if it's not web standards? Does that amount to a public flogging? Or, you know, how do you...
You're
you
rubbish!
Know,
it's all in how you do it.
Yeah, I think it really depends. You know, my technique is to start out really, really sweet. And
start out
and to be helpful,
and then there's the fist of steel
and
underneath,
and then
the sweet.
For them to learn that there's steel under the honey,
right?
You know, once I've got you in my clutches. So I tend to not enjoy calling people out. And you know, as I sit on a university campus with millions of web pages, and I don't control the webmasters in the different colleges. So I have to do a similar job in that small version of the world. And I start by getting the ideas in their head so that it becomes something that they believe in.
Yeah, personally, I'd say that those commenting services, if you go that route, instead of trying to contact the actual site owner first, you're probably going to get even regardless of how sweet you try to be, you're probably going to piss the person off.
Right. Well, and so, also it would make them less likely to post in the future. You know, if something's not exactly right, if it's bleeding edge, or
but
if they just happen to showcase an interesting quirk.
If you turn it around and say, hey, I noticed that you have some information here, or there's something on your website and it's slightly out of date, and I'd love to help you get it, you know, updated. I think that's a much better approach. Again, puts you in direct contact with the person, gives you that opportunity to evangelize and to have that person feel like, wow, there's a community out there that could be supportive, and would hopefully make them more likely to join that.
And a follow-up question. If I'm going to do that, I'm going to have to make sure every single one of my ampersands are encoded, because the first thing they're going to do is then validate my own page and then call me out. So how do you approach the subject where you're not being argumentative and then you're just, you know, initiating a conversation?
That brings up a good question, because I'd say that at least once a day we get a an email, right, to public. Porter's laughing because he gets these too. You're the Web Standards Project and your CSS doesn't validate. Anybody here ever sent one of those emails?
Yeah.
Nobody's raising their
hand.
Yes, but that's internal.
I find it really frustrating.
You know, I think that then it starts to come down to, well, are you following the spirit of standards? You know, what is it that you're actually violating? Is it something incredibly egregious, or, you know, are there reasons for either doing it, or is it, you know, CMS or something that's preventing you from doing it? I think then you can kind of get in explanations, and that's where you really kind of start to get people thinking about standards, right? Not just as you follow this black and white law, but it's something you have to learn. It's still an art. It's not a complete science, and you still have to make some of those finer decisions and those calls about what you're going to do or not do with your code.
Cool.
Thanks.
So what about search engines and actually having them index bad code? I mean, they do a lot of indexing of bad code, and they've been saying that, well, there's so much out there, so we can't really do anything about it. How about creating standards around that?
Could be interesting. Or task force. But I'll naively ask the question, what's in it for them? Like, that's how you have to work at it, right? And I think you could find some value to them. But I know, like, a lot of people, their response to the whole version targeting thing with IE was, well, we should just go break all that code because it's bad, and we should enforce standards on people. And that doesn't really help my mom when her websites are broken, right? And I think search engines would have the same problem. If they could do something that would help that, like, you could easily go see how much of your site was broken or something, because they could run it through the validator for you. But then, well, I mean, the validator is not that hard to use, right?
And I would say, while the search engines are definitely indexing non-WIMP standards compliant pages, making your pages more compliant and following accessibility standards, there was a study done in the UK that I think Henny was mentioning to me the other day, where a banking firm had brought their site onto web standards and just watched their search engine results go through the roof. And I was also talking, Aaron, do you want to grab the mic and talk?
My response to that would be that rather than going after the bureaucracy of the corporation, it's more of a Darwinist thing of use standards, communicate semantically, you know, present a clear information hierarchy, and you rise to the top. Defy that, use the bold tag instead of an H1, and you'll float to the bottom. So it kind of is, in my mind, it seems like something that takes care of itself.
Okay, so we only have just about 3 minutes left here, so this might have to be our last question or comment.
Okay, we'll go quick.
If they'll let us keep going, then we will, but if they won't, then we'll have to... Were we going to try to meet at the Rio Grande? Is that the plan?
Right after this at the Rio Grande.
Yeah, right. Ask after this question. At the Rio Grande.
Okay, I was thinking of if we join the idea of having badges on the site with the idea of having the resources on the wiki, we could actually use the web for putting a badge, which is actually on the server of you guys, which makes automatically the referrer, right? You could actually have people go through the list and see that all the resources that you're pointing at are still valid. So you could actually use, instead of putting everything on your own site, use all the different sites, and because of the PageRank algorithm, increase those things. It's a very interesting idea.
It's very interesting.
Thanks for sharing.
I'm not sure I want to take on the load of having to serve up that image.
You dump it all to somebody else. There's other validators out there.
Not unless we find another server first. Yeah, definitely. Go ahead. Good idea. Go for it.
Okay. I think the first action, the first thing you need to change a behavior is awareness. And if you don't know that your website is not following standards, then how are you ever going to want to or know to change it? So I would really like to get a task force, or have you consider a task force that could lobby browser manufacturers to put little green check marks on whether you have
I have an answer to this one.
Valid markup, valid behavior, but valid CSS.
So 99.9% of our users are my mom. And the green check mark, I got a lot of moms. But you get my point. So the interesting thing, though, is that there's a meeting of two things that I think that we're doing that will help this. One of them is the dev tools, the IE7 dev toolbar even actually does have direct links into the validation. And the second thing is putting the developer tools into every copy of IE, because I think that developers will use it more frequently because it's always there. They'll use the tools that are there, and then they will have the ability to validate much more easily, rather than thinking, you know, although they're tweaking their website, going along, they finally get it to work and they just kind of walk away, rather than thinking about the fact that, oh, and while I'm here, I'll just validate it.
Well, as a follow-up, your marketing folks will never see that. They won't care. They don't care. That's they just need to look at it. It is a purely visual to them. But if they see a red X, they're going to walk down the hall and say, why is there a red X right here on my browser right now? And the answer is, we don't have the funding for that. Would you like to fund that? Yeah. Well, it's the first step to behavior modification is awareness. And if you only make web developers aware, you're not going to get the exposure that you would otherwise.
That's true. But I don't want to be the person who goes out and puts a red X on 99% of the websites out there.
Yeah,
okay,
I'd say
well,
that
you
there...
already do that for JavaScript.
In a way, yes.
In a way, in a big way.
Yes. It started that way.
Oh.
Okay, so that's awareness is important to even your mom.
Since we're past time and we have one more question, thank you so much for that.
Sorry, really quick. I just think going after SEO companies would be a great task force or idea because I'm tired of telling clients that they suck. And there are some good ones, but the majority of the ones I see out there are so bad, and I think that'd be great.
Okay, well, thanks, everybody, for attending and participating. Those folks who have the bookmarks with the pink on the back, please come up to get your book.
If you have a good witch.
If you'd like to speak with us, please don't come up to the table. We were, like we said, we're going to the Rio Grande.